When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Good evening, everybody. Tonight we're going to be debating, do demons exist? And 10 minutes on the floor, over to you, Justice. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, T-Job. Thank you, everyone, for coming out to see the debate tonight. Thanks to Modern Debate in general for the platform, and to James specifically for creating it for us. Tonight we're going to be talking about, do demons exist, or evidence for the existence of the demonic? First of all, I'd like to say the reasons why I would like to have this debate. The number one reason is that I would like there to be a record on the internet, sort of for people who might otherwise miss the notice that there are such a thing as demonic entities, and that can influence your life, and that there is a way to get help if you're in such a circumstance where demonic influence is involved in, you know, interacting with your life. So for me, it's an evangelical sort of outreach opportunity to tell people about it. So why would I be the one to tell people about it? My name is Justice Walker, and I've been a missionary in Russia for over 20 years. I was originally born and raised in the United States, but have been overseas in this particular mission field for quite a long time. And inadvertently, completely without my desiring it, I fell into a ministry of helping people become relieved from demonic influences that they're having in their lives. People who would come to our church and people who weren't even members of our church would often, years ago, begin to come to us for help with unexplained phenomena in their homes that we could then help with. And over the course of the last 20 years, I've been privy to some 20-some exorcisms, and I have seen both the horror and the terror of demonic influence on people's lives, and the peace and release and relief that people can gain when those demonic influences are expelled. Before I get into my evidence, I'd like to really quick, because last time this debate that I did this, there was a lot of people in the chats that said, oh, you know, he makes his living, charges people. In fact, we never advertise any kind of exorcism kind of like service. People who have an issue are looking for answers, and they come to the church for that. So that's the first thing. And second, I never, neither, you know, for my pastoral services or if I do what I call cleaning, never take any money for that. That's definitely a pro deo kind of a service that we do to help people out. So the motive is always simply to give people release and relief from the oppression and the terror that they are involved in. So the evidence for the demonic. First, we're going to go to historic evidence. Second, we're going to go to what I would consider objective evidence or other testimony. And the third will be my own personal experiences, anecdotal. So historic evidence is that belief in the demonic historically is the most widespread belief among all cultures and all societies throughout all time. There is less belief in a higher deity throughout all nations and cultures and times than there is in the demonic. The demonic has had more belief by all cultures and all times than even a higher deity. So again, this is, of course, T-Jump will jump on it and say, pun intended, will jump on it and say that this is an argument from history or from popularity, and that is to some extent true, but you have to take in consideration that if this is a universally held belief by all peoples in all times, it may need something more than just hand-waving to dismiss it. The second set of evidence is that in modern times, we do have evidence of exorcisms and the demonic. Two things that I'd like to note is there's a very good exorcist. His name is Father Martin Carlos, who has been doing exorcisms for over 20 years, is documented a large variety of his experiences. And I would refer anyone to his podcast to get both an entertaining and informative introduction into that world. Also, there is a professor of psychology, and his book is Demonic Foes, where he looks at the instances of demonic oppression and demonic possession of people, particularly through the lens of psychology. So defining where there are actual psychological issues and where there actually are something that's not explained by psychology, and that is definitely more than that. And we can get into some more of these types of people as the debate goes on. The third set of evidence is my own personal experiences, where, as I said, I kind of fell into helping what I call clean apartments or clean houses from demonic influences. And this happened because I ended up, when I was a young missionary, living in an apartment in a city that had a what we would call a house spirit or a house demon. And having suffered some affliction from that, we figured out how to expel the demon. And that was where my career started. And ever since then, I've, like I said, had about 20 different experiences with expelling demons from dwellings, and why demons would like to, you know, indwell houses or bodies. We can get into that in the back and forth. But in short, that is my water cooler presentation. I don't know where I am on my time because I'm blind and can't see the clock. But
you still have.
But that is more or less
over 3.5 minutes.
Yeah, so I'll just cede the rest of my time there and kick it over to T-Jump, and then we can get into the question, back and forth.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Justice, for your opening. I just want to remind everybody hanging out in the live chat that we are a friendly, neutral space here at Modern Day Debate. We host debates on science, politics, religion, and we hope that you all feel welcome hanging out in the live chat or just listening in on our podcast forum, which all of these will be uploaded to our podcasts within 24 hours of us having them, along with our guests linked in the description of our podcast and our YouTube video. So with that, I'll hand it over to you, T-Jump. You have 10 minutes on the floor. And starting now.
There is no evidence of demons existing. All of the evidence is to the contrary. The reason the scientific method exists is in order to differentiate imagination from reality. And the fact that demons have never been able to make any novel predictions indicates that they are imaginary, not real, just like magic crystal woo, leprechauns, fairies, unicorns, energies, karma, reiki, chiropractic, all fake, all no evidence to indicate them. And the way we can do this is because they don't make novel predictions. We need to make novel predictions about the future and confirm them in novel, testable, confirm them in peer-reviewed studies in order to show that they're real. Demons have not done that, just like fairies and leprechauns have not done that and failed every time. The reason people believe in exorcisms is the same reason people believe that magic, a rabbit's foot gives you luck, or putting a horseshoe above your house entrance gives you luck, or painting blood on your door protects you from evil spirits. It's because of psychological features in the human brain, fallacies, biases, illusions, delusions, misconceptions, weighted biases in the brain that cause you to believe certain things work, even though they did nothing, simply because you are priming your brain to believe them because you already have the belief and you want it to be true. And so if it happens to have a positive impact, even though it's the exact same percent chance of it happening as random chance, then you'll believe it because you like it, not because the evidence actually indicates it. And you'll believe it has evidence, even though it's the same as random chance. So there's no evidence of demons, just like there's no evidence of Reiki healings or chiropractic working.
All right. Well, thank you so much, T-Jump, for your opening statement. We will put it into an open floor discussion. Just going to remind everybody in the live chat, we will be doing a Q&A at the end of this. So if you have questions for either of our speakers, get them in now so they'll be asked nice and early. With that, I'll kick it over to you, Justice, to respond to some of what you just heard.
All right. So first of all, I'm really glad that interested that T-Jump brought up chiropractic, because this is one of the go-to things that the lovely supporters of science like to, or the so-called supporters of science like to go to. I just challenge, you know, the thousand, whatever, how many viewers, 10,000 viewers that will view this debate on YouTube, among you who have gone to chiropractors and gotten some real serious help from them, to attest to the contrary. Chiropractic actually does work, and like exorcisms, it is something that can be attested to by the experience of those who have gone through the experience. But my direct question to T-Jump would be, what is your standard of evidence? It was interesting that I listened to a debate recently.
Novel testable predictions.
So the question for me then is, I listened to a debate recently with Matt Dilhoney where he said that if they found a wooden boat on Mount Ararat,
is bad at epistemology. I don't want to hear what Matt Dilhoney had to say. It's not interesting.
So if you found a wooden boat on Mount Ararat that was dated back to 6,000 years ago, would that be decent evidence that there was such a thing as Noah's Ark and that there was such a thing as a global flood?
Maybe. I don't really know much about the story. So like, if the Bible predicted that there would be a boat of a particular size and shape on this mountain that dated to whatever year, whatever, and that was confirmed and found later, then yes, that would be good evidence.
So if we make a prediction that such things like how spirits exist and they have particular sorts of phenomena associated with them, and that after doing an exorcism that these phenomena would then go away and provide relief to the people that are suffering from the phenomena, isn't that a predictable, testable, predictable theory that can then be verified?
Only if it's novel. So only if it's things we don't already explain by like every other means.
Right. So if a house cleaner like myself, who's aware of things like depression, things like people dealing with grief, things like gas leaks, things like carbon monoxide.
Yeah, if it solves those gas leaks, yeah, exorcism solving gas leaks, great evidence. I love it.
No. We are excluding those, T-Jump. Pay attention. Don't type on your phone. Listen.
I'm going to type on my phone as much as I want. I don't need to listen to you. I can already debunk you.
Sure, of course.
But you were listing these things because why?
Because you said if we can exclude other things that we can explain. And so I'm saying, yes.
No, I said novel things.
Normal.
So what I was saying was you need to provide novel.
So by novel, what do you mean?
New. Novel means new. It just means things that aren't already explained by everything else. So like if you're
so
saying that there are certain phenomena like
explain.
Dish. No, that part's irrelevant. That part's totally irrelevant. So novel predictions means you need to predict a phenomenon that isn't already explained by other things. So like if we know plates falling over, already know who does that, the wind can do that just fine. If we know about gas leaks are caused by pipes. If we know poisoning is caused by lead poisoning or the water, or if it's a psychological phenomenon like depression, which can be solved by psychosomatic kinds of induction, talking about ideas, crystals, chiropractic, for example, placebo effect does absolutely nothing to benefit the body, but makes people feel good because they're being touched and having lots of interactive oxytocin release from being with the doctor. But literally we can do the MRI, say, yep, completely failed, did nothing. These kinds of things were the phenomenon in the case of chiropractic where people feel better, but literally nothing changed about their body because we know oxytocin was released. Just like the woo religious healers who are say they can grow people's legs back or make them see or make them hear. It's all fake. We can prove it's fake. We can do the examinations of their body and show nothing changed, but they had a giant release of oxytocin and dopamine, which caused them to feel like something changed because of priming. So that's already fully explained. So it has to be something we don't already explain. So like if you can levitate a chair, that'd be great. If you could, I don't know, kill somebody, that'd be great. Great evidence. Start killing people with ghosts and stuff. Phenomenal evidence. Sure.
Yeah. So the question that I would have is, you know, what is the explanation for instance, someone being healed from hepatitis A or hepatitis B or AIDS or impotency after prayer, for instance, all things that I've experienced personally.
You're wrong. It's called a delusion. Delusion.
It's, you know, people that I have personally prayed for and seen these exact healings, like AIDS, hepatitis A, hepatitis B. That's a little bit off the topic. We're talking about demons. So to come back to the topic is, you know, if we see that someone is dealing with a entity in their home that is causing a lot of oppression, a lot demonic oppression, and then we can exclude things like, of course, gas leaks, carbon monoxide poisoning, depression, and still we have the phenomena. And then we say, okay, our prediction is that this is demonic. Our prediction is that we will go and do the exorcism, and then that relieves the problem. The issue goes away. Isn't that a prediction that is verifiable?
It's not novel, so it's I can predict and verify that the sun will rise tomorrow. That's the novel part, is the key fact. So diseases have a spontaneous remission rate. Pretty much all diseases, even HIV, has several cases of spontaneous remission where it just can't reproduce in the body, and so it's been cured of a person. There's a guy in Australia that happened to. So what you need to show is that you can implement this and have the results be higher than that of random chance of what happens everywhere else in the world for people who don't undergo your methodology of whatever you're doing.
So again, I was not here to defend the, you know, faith healing claims. I have my own, you know, theology of that. However, I was just saying that in my own personal experience, what do you think the chances are of someone praying for someone with hepatitis A, another person with hepatitis B, another person with AIDS, another person with impotency, another person with various diseases, and seeing those things, you know, healed? And what is the chance of all of those happening with one person? I think it's
extremely high,
pretty low.
We see that happen all the time with people who are deluded. People who are deluded and believe in religious faith healings will pray over people and believe they are healed. They're wrong. They're wrong objectively, but they believe they're healed. In many cases, the person
I'm not talking about. Yeah, I'm not talking about.
Let me finish. So yeah, you are wrong. You are wrong in every one of those cases. You are deluded. You were misconceived. It didn't happen. But there are some cases where it does happen. Very rarely, spontaneous remission does occur. But mostly, you're wrong. There are lots of people who claim to have the exact same experiences you do. They're wrong. These happen many, many times, millions of times all over the world. It's fully explained. It's a well-known phenomenon. What you would need is to take those experiences and to actually have qualified medical doctors who are not well-known people who know how to publish papers, not your personal doctor, not people in your community, actual published Stanford, Princeton professors, do an analysis that is publicly peer-reviewable. It can be confirmed by other doctors, and other doctors can do the tests, show that this person has a disease or whatever phenomenon in particular you want to talk about. And then you do your methodology of whatever it is, the exorcism or whatever. And then they go back and show it's healed. And you have to do this about 100 to 1,000 times. And then we can show that if you're, and then we have to have a control group. There's a control group that we don't do the experiment to. We don't do the exorcism. They have all the same symptoms, all the same diseases or problems or whatever. We don't do exorcisms to them. We do exorcisms to your group. And your group will have to have a higher number of people who are cured or whatever symptoms relieved you're trying to argue for. And if your group has a higher number of cured people than the control group, then you have evidence. We've done this study many times.
I wasn't preparing for a, you know, healing debate. If healing actually occurs,
I apologize. So I'm using healing because it's easier for me to understand what healing is than what an exorcism is. And so I'm replacing the healing example just for the exorcism, but the same thing
I'm saying is that, you know, I'm totally willing to defend that. There are studies that have been done that have actually shown that faith healing does work, that prayer does have an effect. However, I'm not going to be defending that today because I'm not prepared for that. I would simply say to the audience that in my own personal experience, not, you know, I know a guy. We've had situations,
literally no difference,
multiple there. Situations where absolutely a difference, where we had a diagnosis from a doctor. Russia is not a third world country. We actually have, you know, decent medicine here. Where you have hepatitis A, hepatitis B, AIDS, and then after prayer, we go back and get the tests done again, and the person is healed. You would disagree that Russia has decent medicine. I would.
That was like more of a joke. It's not relevant to the debate. So again, you need to give me
look
a
at the infant mortality comparison with the United States, and
yeah, America's also... even more garbage. 100% agree with you on that one. But you need to give me a Princeton Stanford professor to actually verifiably publish a paper, go do the studies, publish this in a paper on a group of people, more than one. You need like 100 people you're doing the exorcism for, and 100 people
all right,
and who have a demon who you're not doing the exorcism for. And then you need to show that your exorcisms have a higher rate of curing whatever ailments or effects in the house or whatever. Yep. Greater
like
than the the control group. You need to do this. This is the only thing that qualifies as evidence.
Would like to refer you and the audience to the studies done by Dr. Richard Gallagher, which he published in his book for popular consumption called Demonic Foes, but he also has scientific papers done on the subject, differentiating between demonic possession and psychological oppression and other known psychological phenomena. So that work to a degree has been done.
It has not.
Also, I'd like to refer you to he is debunked. So
yes, he is 100% debunked. You know, he did not perform he did not have a control group. He did not show any actual data. It was not peer reviewable. There is nothing in his work that is in any way verifiable scientifically. There are no peer review papers he's presented. He's complete debunked. It's just what he is doing is the exact same thing that a crack does when they publish a book and say, "Oh, look at all my cool findings that aren't peer reviewed and you can't check them." Great. That's not a peer review paper. Give me a peer review paper that we can test and repeat with real professors that are not quacks. And every time this tried, failed. 100% failure rate for all prayer healing, all mystical forces have always failed this test at 100% rate of failure.
Yeah. I would refer the audience to Dr. Richard Gallagher's book and to judge for yourself if it's all quackery or if it's actually has some foundation in reality. So
I would refer the audience to the consensus I would refer the audience to the consensus in the experts of every single academic field related to the topic that completely say it's a joke.
All right, let's
and they can just check that on their own.
Yep. So that is, of course, you know, the surprise here, and this is something that I always find interesting talking with, you know, strict materialists, is that the surprising thing that something that we're claiming as a supernatural phenomena, is not explainable or, you know, subjectable to a scientific method or the scientific process is not surprising in a worldview where you understand that there are things we call supernatural forces. The very
I didn't understand
concept
that
of
sentence.
A supernatural.
I'm not quite sure what you were saying.
The very
there,
concept
so like...
of a supernatural force means that it is outside of nature. And so the idea that we would be able to subject it to a natural system of inquiry, like we can gravity or electromagnetism or any.
Well, that's just a stupid argument.
Yeah, they're
so
natural
like,
force.
This is
a little bit absurd.
This is an excuse that quacks use that is completely irrelevant. Science doesn't care if things are natural or supernatural or ubernatural or spiritual. We don't care. The same method works for literally anything. Spiritual, non-spiritual, supernatural, magic pixie, farting dust. We don't care. It works for literally anything at literally every level in the universe, out of the universe. Magic levels, physics levels, particles, natural, non-natural, doesn't make a difference. This method works for literally everything. You need to differentiate imagination from reality. The way you do that is you say, here is an object. I believe it exists. Doesn't matter if it's a ghost or a spirit or a Reiki crystal. And you say, this thing will have an effect in the world. It has an effect in the world. And if we change it in some way, it'll have a different effect, independent and dependent variables. So you have an independent variable, you have a dependent variable. If it changes at a rate higher than chance, you have evidence. It's very simple. It makes no difference whether the thing is spiritual or non-spiritual. This is an excuse quacks use that can't provide evidence.
And I would agree. And I would agree with you that it is important in the world to differentiate between reality and imagination. I would totally support that, of course. And in your original statement of what is evidence, you said that it has to make, you know, novel predictions. And when we say that we are making novel predictions with saying that these demonic entities are giving these particular kinds of phenomena, and that we can predict that by doing an exorcism, we can relieve the suffering of those who are suffering, or get rid of the phenomena, the physical phenomena that are being presented, that would fit into your definition of evidence. Especially
no, that's the part
if,
where
when we say that it's novel, that no, we're
this
excluding
is the part, wait, hold up, I think this is the
other
part
things
One sec.
That can
that's not
it.
A
Go
part that's it. Literally not what novel means. Has nothing to do with excluding other things. Literally not what novel means. So the point of novel is that it has to be something we don't already know. We don't already see. If you predict the sun's going to rise tomorrow and say the sun will rise tomorrow, therefore the flying spaghetti monster exists, do you think that's good evidence of the flying spaghetti monster?
Of course not.
Why?
Because we have an explanation for why the sun rises. It's not a novel prediction.
Forget that. Say we didn't. Say we've seen it happen a billion times, right? Every day the sun rises. Somebody predicting the sun will rise tomorrow is like, great, good job. We can all predict that because we've seen it a million times. Your made up hypothesis doesn't tell us
sure,
anything
because
we've already seen
because of the intervention, because we can make an intervention, we can have a dependent variable. I mean, I understand that. That's
well, forget
that's
all
not
just,
the...
we've seen it before. Predicting something we've already seen a million times isn't evidence. We don't care. We don't, if you predict the sun will rise tomorrow, no one cares. This is the problem. If you predict you have this special methodology that will heal people or that will exorcise demons or something, and then this will have some kind of psychological effect.
Here's my prediction. Here's my prediction. Someone comes to me and says, we have something that we think is unexplainable. It's supernatural. It is a thing that's causing us terror, fear, oppression, whatever. We go in and say, okay, is it carbon monoxide? Is it gas leak? Is it death of a relative?
I don't know. So that part's a flaw in your methodology. That part literally is irrelevant. We don't care about exclusionary principles. We don't care. But so here's the point
of
the
matter.
Of course,
you never exclude.
That's not a part of science. It's a quack methodology that's irrelevant to science. So here's the important part. We have seen. So you make a prediction, you say somebody's having a negative side effect in their house or psychologically or whatever. I'm going to do an exorcism and they're going to be cured of this psychological effect or phenomenon or whatever. And we see this happen a million times. We see it happen for Reiki. We see it happen for religious healings. We see it happen for leprechaun exorcisms. We see it happen for unicorns. We see it happen for demons. We see it happen for the evil juju down at the bottom of the sea. We see this happen in every society, all over the world, every faith healing, every church who does the weird little, I'm going to extend your foot and make you see and make you hear when you couldn't hear because you're deaf. We've seen this a million times. Every time it's been investigated, oh, that's a known delusion, hallucination, human misconception, fallacy, bias, every single time. This is the sun rising tomorrow. You have your personal experiences, and because your brain is extremely biased to selectively pick the ones that make you feel good about your ideology, you're going to find things that fit, that make you believe your hypothesis is true. It's called confirmation bias. You find the ones that hit and ignore the misses. So in order to filter that out, in order for it to be real evidence, in order for it to be novel, you need to have a control group You need to have an experiment group. You need to have a published paper that shows you can have a control group and do this multiple times. 100 people do the exorcism. Something is changed in a positive way at a higher rate than the control group. You need to publish this paper, and we need to be able to repeat it. We need to have people in Princeton and Stanford and Georgia Tech do the experiment, have the same result.
We do have to let
them independent
respond
to
some
of you. Don't interrupt me. No, this is important. Sorry. So this is the key here. You need to be able to do this.
I will, take the cue from the moderator. The interesting thing here is that, you will exclude anything that doesn't fit your particular, this particular scientific paradigm. And again, as I said before,
exclude nothing.
I can make a novel prediction that people who are suffering from demonic oppression that we can identify as demonic oppression will receive a freeing from that oppression by an exorcism. And that is not novel.
It is. I just literally novel. Explained this to you. No, it's not.
I understand what you said.
Pay attention.
I literally understand the words that come out of your mouth.
No, you didn't.
And I literally understand how you like to interrupt people and overtalk people.
Because you literally just lied. You lied about what I said.
No.
Okay.
I didn't lie.
You lied about understanding what you said. I don't want to put you on. He's wasting my time. If he's accusing you of misrepresenting, we'll let him clarify just right quick so that we do have that clarity, and then we'll try this one more time.
So, as I said, novel, something we have not seen before. Something we have seen before. Quacks saying they will have some cure-all for somebody and seeing a positive result. That's the sun rising. That is not novel. There is no case where you can have your personal experience or your personal anecdotes ever be novel. They can never be novel. They will never qualify as novel. What novel means is you need to do a peer-reviewed study. Give me 100 people who, or 200 people who are affected by the demons or whatever. Do your exorcism on 100. Don't do it on a different 100. Have peer review from Stanford and Princeton be able to confirm, do the same test, and confirm that your methodology works. If you can do that, it's novel. Your personal experience is never novel, ever. Nothing you say is novel, because literally millions of people around the world have done the exact same thing for Reiki, for leprechauns, for demons, for spirits, for
We've
ghosts.
We've heard this before.
This is not novel.
Thanks. Good. So you've done your little list.
No, wait.
No, really, stop. Literally.
What have you lied about?
15 seconds.
You need to stop and let
you
just
What you lied about?
Because
you said this.
I did not lie.
Stop talking.
10 seconds.
Stop talking. What you lied about was when you said it's novel. Here's your quack experience. And I literally said quack experience doesn't count as novel because millions of people in the world have all had the same quack experience. To be novel, you need novel predictions with a peer-reviewed study. Control group. Right.
So I want to give you a chance to respond to that uninterrupted for a minute. So go ahead there, Justice. Or at least a minute.
All right. So everyone's heard T-Jump's little tirade. I did not say anything that he was lying or that I lied about his position in any way. To disagree with your opponent is not the same thing as to say that he is to lie about his position. Now, you've heard it from T-Jump, everyone in the chat, everyone who's viewing this debate, that T-Jump does not believe that any of you can have a novel experience, that your experience of life
is completely unnovel.
Yeah, we'll give him 30 seconds.
Also,
T-Jump
likes to derail these debates by going into ad hominems and claiming that people lie. I'm not lying about what
you lied
said
when you said you understood
I,
my right. words. That was the lie.
Right, we
that's
will
why I had to
back and forth. So
I never said
to,
you but... lied about my position. You lied when you said you understood my words. So I was correct.
Right. No, I understand what you said, and I have to disagree. Not. That is not a lie. That is simply a disagreement. Now, T-Jump has said that, if I don't have evidence that is up to his level standards of investigation or whatever, that if I don't have these peer-reviewed papers, if I don't have Princeton or somebody's particular thing, that's it. There's no evidence for anything. And then I'm wasting his time. I would not want to waste his time. So if we want to, you know, jump into the Q&A, that's fine. Because I don't have peer-reviewed papers. What I have is my own experiences and the experiences of the people that have been helped. And also the experiences of many other exorcists who I know. We can talk about those. But again, with this particular opponent, that would be unprofitable. So, you know, up to the moderator prerogative.
So what I'll do is I'm going to throw out a prompt here and see if I can get you guys to maybe vamp on this.
I'm not quite done yet. So
sure, if you want to take a chance to respond. But yeah, I do think it would maybe be fruitful to move into a new topic after we wrap this one up.
So Justice was partially right there when he said that we require peer review. Yeah, you have to be able to have Stanford and Princeton review it. Them specifically. You don't have to specifically get Stanford to review it, but peer review, the way it works is you present
a paper. That's magnanimous of you.
All right, we'll let him speak.
So you have to present a paper that people can peer review, like Stanford, like Princeton, and then you have to have someone who's actually qualified in the field do the peer review, not quacks. The reason that your personal experience, I didn't say all personal experience doesn't count. That's not true. Personal experience doesn't count if it's not novel. Everything Justice just mentioned, his personal experience, the personal experience of the people he's helped, and the personal experience of the exorcists he knows, none of that is novel. That's the exact same thing all quacks have. Water dowsing, quacks have that. Chiropractic, quacks have that. Flat earther quacks have that. All quacks have those things. That's like saying, oh, look, the sun rises tomorrow, therefore my theory is right. Everybody on the planet has that data point. Everybody can use that to predict something. They can say the sun will rise tomorrow, therefore magic farting pixie leprechauns. Is that evidence of magic pixie leprechauns? No, because that data point you're using is the exact same for everybody else, and everybody else has it, which means it's not novel. If you present something that everyone else has and it's been proven to be garbage for everybody else, you claiming to have it now is also garbage. In order to show that what you have is somehow significantly different than the dowsers or the Reiki healers or the chiropractors or the voodoo witch doctors, who all have personal experience and personal experience of people that helped and personal experience of co-conspirators or co-practicers or whatever, is to do a peer-reviewed study that we can verify at Stanford. That's what we need. Your personal experience, you're right, it's completely a waste of time. Your friend's personal experience, complete waste of time. Other exorcist personal experience, complete waste of time. We don't care. The reason we don't accept those in scientific papers is because it's the same garbage that has been presented for everywhere in the world, for every silly idea everywhere in the world has been debunked. So you need to go up your game. If you want people to take you seriously, you need to take those personal experiences, do a peer-reviewed study, present a methodology other people can replicate in Stanford, have them do it, then you got your evidence.
Again, what you've just heard is TJM going through a litany of circumstances or a litany of experiences that people have had that he says that he claims he's debunked or have been debunked, but I would say are actually evidence of the opposite. So if you have people who can confirm that they have had these experiences and that the prediction is that doing an exorcism of their property, of themselves, gives relief, I would submit that that is at least tangential evidence of the demonic. And the fact that we have so many of these experiences is exactly part of the body of evidence.
So I would, for my response would be, we have tens of thousands of testably confirmed novel predictions that prove humans have fallacies, biases, illusions, delusions, misconceptions, hallucinations that explain literally everything in his body of evidence and everything in the Reiki body of evidence, everything in the chiropractic body of evidence, and everything in the flat earth body of evidence. We know they don't work. These are proven things that have already passed peer review and have been confirmed a million times everywhere in the world. We know here's how the human brain fails consistently. And he's saying, well, the fact that the human brain fails consistently, we're just going to use those failures as evidence. Well, that is a waste of everyone's time. That's why science does not take quack seriously, because you're using the things that we know don't work as the whole foundation of your ideology. If you take your ideology seriously, you should stop using the things we know are broken and start using the things we know actually work.
Except for the difference is I do know the things that work. So that's exactly what I'm saying, is that I personally, not someone, not my friend, not my friend's friend, not something, me personally, use a methodology that does work. And that is exactly what I'm saying. There is one reasoning. Point of agreement that we have in your previous litany of quackery, is that I do agree with you that the flat earth people are kind of crazy, but we can agree on that.
Sure.
But so what, going back to,
I did want to pick up on that thing you said where you said you use a methodology that you know works. The problem with that is the point of the debate is, does your method work? That's the thing we're trying to figure out. So you just saying you know it works, you don't.
No, what we're trying to figure out is, we're saying that the point that it made isn't, does Justice Walker's method of exorcism work? That's not what the debate is about. The debate was, is there evidence of the demonic? And I say there's historic evidence. I say there is evidence from other exorcists
because your methodology
today.
Works, right? Right. That's,
and I say
works,
that
that's the evidence.
And I say that my own method works. Of course, I can't prove to you here than just me saying it.
Wait, there's an important point here that I wanted to go down. So your evidence, one of your evidences was that you have this method that can relieve symptoms, which is, like, so there's demons or whatever, and you have a method of exorcism and that relieves symptoms, and that's evidence, right?
Yes.
And so part of the topic of the debate is, does your method work? That's one of the things that we don't know. That's one of the unknowns. That's one of the dependent variables. And so we need to use an independent variable.
Sure. And there is no peer-reviewed Princeton paper that Correct. Says that Justice Walker's methodology works. So
Correct.
I,
and so that's, so that's the, you know,
that is my own. That's why I said in my opening statement, that's an anecdotal evidence. Correct. It is my own personal anecdote. It's my personal experience, but it is an experience.
That's why when you said the sentence, when I said the sentence, we need a methodology that works, and you responded, well, I have a methodology that works. It's my own. That's circular reasoning. That's why we need to use an external source to verify your method, which is the peer review, control group, test group.
I would
confirm it.
Yeah.
And you could do this. You don't need me. You don't need Princeton to do this. You can publish a paper to do this. You can just get 200 people with demonic possessions that you've confirmed, get them all with your friends. You don't need to do it yourself. Do the exorcism on 100. Don't do it on a different 100. Record the results. Provide a method that other people can repeat this experiment. So, like, Princeton can do the exorcisms on 100 and not on another 100 and get results. That's all you need. And you have real evidence of the demonic, and you win $1 million from the James Randi Foundation. Just do the actual thing, the method that is verifiably succeeded for thousands of years that have been proven through the scientific method. Use that to show that this is real. Win $1 million.
Sounds like a good plan. I might just do that.
Please, so I will concede the debate if you do. If you do, I'll be like, you win, demons are real. I would love that. Give me magic. That would be awesome. When you win, I will concede the debate.
All right. Does that have to be, Moscow State University work for you, or does that have to be Princeton?
Yeah, probably. I don't really know about, like, what are qualified or not, but yeah. So, like, if you publish it in a peer-reviewed journal, it'll be repeated in multiple countries and multiple cities. So it just has to be peer-reviewable and by accredited universities. So yeah, if you can publish it in
all Moscow right. So if I could fine. Produce, if I could give you a paper from the Moscow State University where they studied 500 examples of demonic possession, and they came to the conclusion that the phenomena that they were observing was not at all explainable by psychological situations, that they did study exorcisms, and that they came to the conclusion that exorcisms worked, you would accept that?
Well, so you just proved that they're quacks. So anytime somebody says it can't be explained by psychological phenomenon, they're a quack. That 100% proves you're a quack. In science, there's this thing called the problem of underdetermination. It's a fact of philosophy, a fact of science. Every data point can be explained by infinitely many hypotheses, always and forever. You can never exclude use exclusionary things to say it can't be that. You can never do that. Anybody who does that's a quack. They don't know science. And so if you're if your school does that, they're quacks, they're not real, and you need to find a real university.
All right. So you've heard it here, people. Moscow State University, not a real university.
No. If
taking into consideration the current environment in the West, I would imagine that would be a predictable
I didn't say anything about Moscow. I said in your paper,
predictable phenomena.
If your paper specifically says they excluded it can't be psychological phenomenon, then they're quacks. Now I doubt it says that in any paper, because anyone who's actually an accredited university won't say that. They'll try to mitigate with probabilities or whatever, but they will never say that. That's not a thing. That's only a thing quacks say. Only quacks try to exclude it can't be this. Only quacks. So if either they didn't say that and you misrepresented the paper, or they did say that and they're quacks. Those are the two possibilities.
Yeah, possibly. I don't understand the methodology. I'd have to say that. But I did read the paper in Russian, and the paper does say that they did exclude psychological factors. So if that's a sign of quackery, there you go. You heard it here. Modern day debate.
Correct. If they think they can exclude psychological factors, they're quacks. The laws of physics are not governed by immaterial things like the laws of logic. Laws of logic, one, they are immaterial things. They're abstract objects. They don't govern anything. They describe the way reality works.
I'm hecka muted, and the audience is coming at me. Sorry, guys, you didn't hear the question, so they're gonna come at me and be like, "What would a debate be if I didn't mute myself at least once?" It's OBS, I'll tell you.
This is the second time, remember, because you were muted at the beginning and they just didn't know it.
Oh yeah, that's right. That is true. They didn't know that. Angel Quiles says for $5. If the material world is governed by immaterial things such as the laws of logic, could you then grant there are immaterial entities beyond that?
So the universe is not governed by the laws of logic. The laws of logic describe the way nature works. Nature is governed by the laws of physics, and the laws of logic simply describe the laws of physics. So if there is some magic laws of magic logic that magically govern things, sure, that would be great evidence. There isn't any. Logic and math are human-constructed languages. It's the very first sentence in the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy on Classical Logic. Logic and math are formal languages. It combines a something-something system of language, blah, blah, blah. Semantics and something. To answer his question, if those magic governing laws existed, that would be great evidence. They don't. Laws of logic don't govern anything they describe.
Yeah. I would just respond to that in that I would agree, again, with T-Jump on this. Math and logic are descriptive of the universe, not that they govern the universe in a way. However, the Christian Bible does say that first the spiritual, then the physical, and the spiritual does have an influence on the physical because it did precede it. So that would be my quick response.
All right. Did you have anything to say in response there, T-Jump, to keep it going, or did you want to move on to the next one?
Magic potatoes pre-existed before the universe, therefore magic potatoes govern the universe.
All right. I'll make sure I keep my hand on my preamp button here, everybody. I won't put myself on mute again so I don't get in trouble. See, the real thing was I got a text from my wife saying, did you take your drink out of the freezer? And I was like, oh no. Anyways, you all know what that can turn into, right? All right, 60 Second Skeptic says, what's a demon physically made of? Because if demons themselves have no physical properties, how do we differentiate it from imagination and placebo?
Yeah, demons have, as the Bible says, Paul says in Corinthians, that there are different matters of different things. So humans have one set of things that they're made of. Human bodies, angelic bodies, or demonic bodies have another set of things that they're made of. We, by definition, say that a demon or angel is a supernatural entity, therefore that is above nature or not having a natural body. So you could imagine it as a parallel universe or however you want that can at times interact with ours, but they're not made of material substance. So it would be a different substance, spiritual substance.
Any thoughts over there, T-Jump, about what you just heard, or you want to move on?
Well, so the question was, what physical material are demons made of? They're not made of physical material. That would be a contradiction. If he was saying they're made of physical material, that'd be great evidence, but they're not. Secondly, how would a thing non-made of physical material interact with the universe? Well, there's lots of ways it could interact with the universe, and it could be, and the third question was, how could we test it? You could test it by making novel predictions. So there could be a non-physical spiritual demon who could interact with the universe, and we could test it by making novel predictions. Like if there's a demon and I pray to the demon and the demon will shave off all of the hair from James's head, and then James comes off bald on camera. That would be phenomenal evidence, even though we couldn't physically test for the demon. You're muted.
No, it's okay. I was just trying to alert the masses to close that bathroom door. It's just making a racket. So anyway, Space Miner, does a peer review require that the peer whom reviews have a peer review of their peer review to be considered a proper peer review?
The peer review is just opening the door for other people to be able to test it. So peer review is making a methodology and a paper that other people can reproduce, like Princeton or Stanford. The fact that Princeton or Stanford particularly reviews it doesn't make a difference. It's irrelevant. The point is that you published a paper that can then be replicated by other people all over the world.
Any thoughts over there, Justice?
The whole concept of peer review is simply to check with your peers, like in the area of physics or in the area of chemistry, that you're actually doing the work and you're presenting your data so that it can give duplicatable results. And I would say that, you know, if I did a peer reviewed paper and my peers, other exorcists, reviewed it, I think they would say that, yeah, they can get the same results.
That's not peer review. Peer review is that literally anybody anywhere in the world who disagrees with you can get with the same results. The people who agree with you, is that's just, again, quacks doing quack stuff. What we need is people who disagree with you. The way science works is, yeah, if a scientist publishes a paper and everyone else hates him, all of the other scientists hate him and want to prove him wrong and want to prove them right, but they get the same results and they don't like it, well, that's peer review. Peer review is not people you agree with getting the same results.
Now, people in the same field, T-Jump, you know, you don't get medical doctors peer reviewing astrophysics papers, because you have to have the same language. You have to have the understanding of fundamentals. So peer means that your peers in your field who may disagree with you.
That is not how it works. No.
Actually, it is how
it works. The reason the paper is published is so anybody can replicate the data.
Sure.
Peer review the confirmations are going to be people who are experts who can confirm it correctly. But what you need is to show that anybody who's an expert in science can confirm it who isn't one of the quack people. If one of the non-quack people can confirm it.
Except for not a strictly scientific question. We're dealing with a question that is by definition non-scientific.
What does that even mean? So the scientific question is it real or imaginary? That's all that scientific question means. Is it real or imaginary? So if you're not asking that question, then you're just admitting it's imaginary.
No, the scientific question is this thing real in the sense of having a material explanation?
No, literally no. Science does not say that at all. Again, that's a quack statement that only quacks say. Scientists say, is it real or imaginary? That's all we care about. If you want to posit a supernatural being that has no physical explanation, we can test it the exact same way. Science does not care. Only quacks say science is limited to the material realm.
No response there, or did you want to carry on, Justice?
Yeah, we just go on.
All right, let's have our next one. Elusive Viper, glad you made it out to the debate. It was nice hanging out with you on stream the other day. How can Justice demonstrate that exorcisms are banishing demons, not pixies, or interfering with Professor X's mind control?
Technically, I could not demonstrate that. I mean, it could be pixies or leprechauns or Professor X's mind control. Although... because, you know, my particular worldview says that these particular phenomena align with what we believe in, or we believe are demonic entities. That aligns with my, if, you know, I was a Mohammedan exorcist, I would say it would probably be jinns, because that would seem to align with that descriptive language that they're using. So you can use different descriptors. I particularly believe that the biblical account of what demons are and their phenomenology is better, has more predictive power. And the ancients agreed that too. One of the reasons why ancient Christianity gained widespread acceptance in the Roman times was because of their success, higher success rate with exorcism than the pagans. So, I mean, that's simply, it's just about having a better predictive power.
All right, you must have some thoughts over there, T-Jump. A little reaction. So, what do you think about?
The quacks in the Christian religion claims to have more successful quackery than the quacks in the pagan religions. Therefore, the quackery was more successful in the Christian religion.
Any response there, Justice, or I just want to carry on?
No, I just, insults aren't arguments.
All right. Bitter truth. Psychoanalysis has evolved a concept of depression that deals with ideas about introjects rather than conceiving them as concrete toxins or demons. Justice, do you agree?
I have no idea about introjects, so I wouldn't be able to comment on that.
All right. Did you have any context you might be able to add to this T-Jump to maybe make something out of Bitter Truth's super chat? He did send in a $10 super chat, so I do want to honor Bitter Truth. So he said, psychoanalysis has evolved a concept of depression that deals with ideas about interjects rather than conceiving of them as concrete toxins or demons.
So I think he's saying that prior to psychology, there were many things that were thought to be, like, people who were epileptic or people who had ADHD were thought to have be possessed by demons. The field of psychology and neurology have replaced those and say, no, these are not demons. These are actual physical phenomena in the brain, replacing the demon idea, and that it's treated with medicine, not with quackery. And I think he's implying that because many of these things were falsely attributed to demons, that pretty much anything we attribute to demons pretty much falsely attributed to demons and is probably just an unknown psychological phenomenon, which is a very good argument inductively.
Yeah, I don't know what the person who asked the question meant by the question, because I don't quite understand the question. If that's what he meant, if he wants to, because of the $10 super chat, if he wants to clarify that that is what he meant, then I can respond to that. But I don't see any point unless that's exactly what was meant by it.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask if you, in the spirit of debate, if you could, interact with T-Jump just expressed there, but we can carry on if you want to clarify.
Yeah, well, T-Jump, what T-Jump said, I'll just respond to what T-Jump said, but if the person who asked the original question wants to clarify, that's fine too.
What
T-Jump said is, that is why modern exorcists all first go to psychologists, first try to figure out, having a person who says, I'm having voices in my head, I'm having oppression, I'm having these malicious things that are happening to me, we say, okay, go get scientific help, go get the help from a psychologist, from a psychotherapist, go get the help from a doctor. We use what we call the Reese Howells principle, which is exhaust all venues, all options of getting help in the mainstream before we say, okay, this is something that is above and beyond that. And, that could be quackery. Like T-Jump has said quite a few times, oh, there's quackery. No, I actually think it's a good principle to use. So people who have, for instance, like Tourette's, that was brought to me one time for exorcism, it's like, you know what? No, this person needs other help.
What was the principle called?
We call it the Reese Howells principle, after Reese Howells intercessor.
I can't find like the principle name anywhere. Is there like a more common name for it? Something.
That's what we know it by.
Okay. Well, yeah. If you want to take a moment to look that up. We can carry on. Bitter Truth did confirm in the live chat there that T-Jump was clarifying his correct point there, so it seems like we did get to interact with the question properly, which is nice. So Retro Video for $5 Canadian. Oh, Canada. Hello, my fellow Canadian. If we have two rooms, one empty room with nothing in it, and one room, one with only a demon in it, how do we tell the difference between the two rooms?
You wouldn't be able to tell the difference without the demon interacting phenomenologically with the room.
Well, I think he's asking, like, how there should be some way it's doing that, right? The demon would do something. Like, if you were there, it would pull your hair or knock over a dish or something. It would. What would it do? This is the question. What would the demon be doing in the room that would differentiate
The demons in general are looking for bodies. They are disembodied spirits. So they're looking for places to occupy, and they're always trying to upgrade their occupation. And the most common way that they do that is through fear, through gaining access to people through fear. So in my experience and experience of other exorcists, the lower grade demons, the demons that are actually very weak, are the ones that end up inhabiting homes or houses. It's no good commentary on my own abilities, but they will then phenomenologically cause fear through breaking things or making strange noises or causing temperature changes, so like drastic temperature changes, causing smells, and that then freak people out, get people to look for help on the dark side of the force. That then gives the demon access to an upgraded dwelling, which would be a human body, is what they're generally after.
I didn't fart. It was a demon.
I was going to say, you say it before I do.
That's possibly.
Exactly what I'm going to tell possibly. My wife the next time. Indeed.
Yeah. You might have a lot of demons in your house, T.J.
When she wakes up all of a sudden in the middle of the night, and it's like, Ryan, what did you do? Anyway, let's carry on. Fact Junior Roll says, whoa, T-Jump hair. He do be styling. So Fact Junior Roll.
Thank you.
Is,
please send me money.
Yeah, I think June Rule's coming on to you there. So
looks like the bad guy is Beth Element.
Behave yourself in the live chat. Hacking the headlines. Thank you for your super chat. $5.
Good movie.
Oh man, we hit a silly moment, guys. Now we're gonna have to try to pull back out into the debate mode, right? All right. So Justice, have you documented any of your healings with film footage, certified medical documents, etc.? If you haven't, why not?
Not film, like, never had any film evidence of it, because mainly the kinds of healings that I've had aren't ones that would be, that you would see on a film. Again, specific ones that I have personally dealt with have been, cancer, which T-Jump will say, oh, remission, hepatitis A, hepatitis B, HIV, a case of impotency, a case of sterility. And these were all medically documented ahead of time that these people had diagnoses, and then afterwards were also diagnosed medically as having remissed, of course. But that is the evidence of the healing.
Any thoughts over there, T-Jump, before we move on?
Oh, he was correct. Spontaneous remission is a fully known explanation of all those things.
That just happens to happen a lot when you pray for them, people.
It does. It's called confirmation bias. It happens a lot when people pray for it and expect it to work, and they accept the hits and ignore the misses.
All right. Well, let's try to carry on. Matters Now, that's where we are going to be having our after show, sends in a $2 super chat. And I don't usually talk too much about other platforms that I participate in actually ever beyond the music that I put on Modern Day Debate. But we had a really chill conversation with James Koontz, the owner of Modern Day Debate, over on Matters Now. It was a lot of fun. So if you're kind of curious about where James stands and all the debates that we're having on the platform, you can definitely go check that out at some point. I assume Ozian, you're on the Matters Now account, asks, Justice, what was the title of this paper on demons?
The Russian title was about, I have to remember the exact title, but it was in Russian, it was the differentiation between psychological effect and demonic possession or something to that effect. I can look it up. I can find it for you. I didn't get it prepped for this debate because I assumed that T-Jump would not accept something that was, he couldn't peer review in English, of course. So, which is fair enough. Like, but I was just asking that in case of the if he would accept that as a peer review thing. So,
well, I need to actually do the experiment or peer review it. Reading the paper isn't anything. I have to like do the experiment.
Right. The problem with doing the experiment is you actually have to believe, right? So that would be one of the prerequisites to the experiment.
No methodology that actually refers to reality requires belief.
Well, yeah. If I say that you have to do some experiment, say with some chemicals, you have to have this amount of temperature, this amount of time, this amount of stirring, you know, to get this result, then you would say, oh yeah, that's necessary. And if somebody did a different temperature, different amount of stirring, you know, different amount of time, then you would say the experiment wasn't done correctly. And if I say you have to actually have a thing called faith for this thing to work, then that kind of puts you into a hard place of doing the experiment.
Well, no, the problem with that is it's logical what you said there, that it would be considered one of the dependent variables or the independent variables that's required to do the experiment. Problem is that we know that that's one of the fallacies used in every quack methodology. And so using, like I mentioned before, if you're using the same quackery that's been debunked a million times before as quackery, one of which would be requiring faith for anything to happen, then you need to stop using the garbage methodologies and go to the ones that work.
Right. The response that I would give to that is, again, if we have quack doctors that hurt people, does not in any way debunk the fact that real medicine actually works.
Sure, but I don't think that is relevant to what I said. So like, we've proven it's that every exactly methodology, like right, millions of people have said, you need to believe for it to work. That's a very common thing in quackery. Quackery, it's extremely common argument. And every time we test it, fails. 100% fails every time, no matter what. If we have people who believe doing the experiment, we're watching them, fails every time. So we know it's quackery and people say that. And so if you're taking that as a requirement for your method to be verified,
I will put the name of the study on demonology in the Moscow State University in the debate. Later I'll find it and come back and put it under the video. And also I will give you a peer-reviewed paper on the efficacy of prayer for healing, which I wasn't prepared for this debate because wasn't the topic. But I'm sure you'll find fault with those.
Give it to Princeton. I have no interest. I've studied enough of those. Know they're bunk and garbage. It's a waste of my time. Give it to Princeton. Get them to repeat it. And if they say it works, I'll be like, yep, you're right. You win.
All right. Our next one coming in from Joshua Woodwin. Thank you so much for your super chat. I thought Putin in Russia makes it public, makes the public do the Russian Orthodox Church. So Putin is not like Xi or Kim Jong, where Christianity is illegal.
Yeah, Putin has had kind of a tolerant to ambiguous relationship with non-Orthodox religions ever since 2008. 2016, he enacted the anti-missionary laws. 2017, they made Jehovah's Witnesses illegal. So it's not exactly like we have 100% freedom of religion in Russia, but most denominations of Christianity and other religions aren't exactly persecuted. They're just frowned upon. So no, you don't have to be a Russian Orthodox. It's just kind of better if you were.
Are you seriously banned Jehovah's Witnesses?
Yes.
That is hilarious. I find that hilarious.
It's really sad.
Yes, true, but they're kind of annoying.
And the the reason was because of their establishment, anti-government views. Like, they would not allow people to work on the to vote or even like hold government positions. Some Jehovah's Witnesses will claim that you can't even work at the post office. Also, not allowing to give blood transfusions for children. Kids were dying. And so these are the reasons why the Jehovah's Witnesses were banned.
Yeah, that last one's actually a pretty good reason. Agreed.
All right, let's carry on from there. And yeah, Ozian, if you're hanging out and you want to tag for the after show, that would be fantastic of you, buddy. Joshua Woodwin asks, actually, sorry, that's the second one from Joshua Woodwin. Well, let's pop on up. First super chat from Trevor CA. Thank you so much for your first interaction on the channel here. If non-physical factors are pseudoscience, are you claiming any exotic participants to or precipitants to the Big Bang can also be dismissed? Very sincere.
Who's he asking?
Very science. Oh my goodness. I was going to say, I might have to get my glasses out for this here. Let me just blow this up. I'm going to read this again, everybody, and not try to butcher it as we so famously sometimes do. If non-physical factors are pseudoscience, are you claiming any exotic precipitants to the Big Bang can also be dismissed? Very
science. Well, they're also physical. So like quantum fields are physical. Strings are physical. Like, they're also the things that pre-exist to the Big Bang are also physical. So I imagine what he's implying is saying that any non-physical thing, if I'm saying any non-physical thing is pseudoscience, then non-physical things that are posited before the universe would be pseudoscience. There just aren't any. Like, all of the physicists in string theory, all of the physicists in physics are physicalists. They believe all that there is physical things. So strings, quantum fields, all physical. That's all physical stuff before the universe, space and time being emergent from physical stuff. Like, I think he's confusing that the Big Bang being the beginning of all physical, all natural things, which no one in physics says.
All right. Any thoughts over there, Justice? Or
I think, again, that the problem with materialists is the presupposition that all things that we could possibly interact with have a material nature. And that the presupposition that I operate under, and I do admit that it's a presupposition, is that there are non-spiritual or non-physical entities, non-material entities that can interact with the material world. Just as the material world can have an effect on the spiritual world can have an effect on the material world, but they are not made of the same substance.
So again, that's not a presupposition anybody in science has. It's only quacks who say that scientists have that presupposition because their quackery can't be confirmed.
Again, T-Jump likes to throw around the insults, and that's not an argument. That is a presupposition of science, and it is a presupposition of faith. So
literally not.
It's those literally are on equal grounds.
So I've proven literally it's not is. By giving methodologies of how to verify the supernatural, which definitively proves it's not a presupposing there's no supernatural. Like, here's a way we could verify the supernatural. That definitely proves that I'm not excluding the supernatural because I just gave you a way to show it exists.
Okay. Any other thoughts or Justice, or would you like to move on to the next?
Yeah, I'd like to respond real quick to something in the chat. Is that okay? Just real fast?
Absolutely.
This is something that came up in the other debate, and I should have addressed it in my opening. Someone is saying in the chat, why is Justice's head shaking? And there are some people who will say, like, oh, he's got a demon, his head is shaking. I have congenital nystagmus, which is a issue with my eyesight. And so because of that, my head shakes to stabilize what I see. And so it has nothing to do with me being insane. At least that's not evidence of my insanity. Or demons. It's just congenital nystagmus, a known thing.
You're just cringing really hard at what I say. You disagree so badly, you just have to shake no the entire time.
I understand. I have an uncle that has the same condition. So every time I'm talking to him, I'm like, you know, when I was a kid, I was like, he's so disagreeable. let's carry on. Joshua Woodwin, does following logic and reason prove to you yet the new atheism today is why the West is failing? And old atheism welcomed Nazi Germany, Soviet Stalin, Benito, Italy, Mao China. What proof do you need?
What was the question?
Does following logic and reason prove to you yet the new atheism today is why the West is failing? The old atheism welcomed X list of Nazi Germany, Soviet Stalin, etc.
Doesn't seem like a coherent question. Like, so none of those were actually atheist movements. Those were all political movements. And all of those political movements are of governments that are trying to impose ideologies on people. The new atheist movements, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Germany, France, the UK, are all people who are voluntarily choosing to adopt atheism. So all of the dictatorships are where there are dictators forcing people or forcing an ideology on people. Whereas all of the new atheists are voluntarily adopting atheism because it's just a better ideology and better societies. And so comparing the two, it doesn't make sense to say new atheism is why the West is failing. It's a product of the success of the West and why we're doing better than ever. I don't know what he's talking about. But you can't criticize atheism in regards to like Hitler, Stalin, Mao, because they're dictators, and dictators of religious groups are also bad. So the dictator part is the bad part. It has nothing to do with atheism. Anything the dictators do are bad because they're dictators.
Yeah. I would say in quick response to that is that I always find it humorous that atheists will hand wave and dismiss any societal experiments that were based on an atheistic worldview as, oh, that's not, you know, real atheism. That's not this and that. And not deal with the real issue of the old atheism dismissing the old religions and having to invent ideologies to replace them that were horrific. And the new atheism doing the exact same thing. And that outside of the theistic worldview structure system, you can't build societies. And the societies that are being built on those structures are, by definition, being more or less and less successful, and in fact are failing. And the definition that I would use would be a biological definition, because that is fundamental to the success of any society. If your ideology and the methods that you're using moves your society to have a non-replaceable birth rate, your ideology, your way of doing things is by definition, headed for failure.
No, that's actually cherry picking. So if we have a longer life expectancy, better quality of life.
That's what you were doing, right? Cherry picking.
No.
These ones don't, I don't like these dictators, so they're not good evidence of atheist societies.
No, so they're not atheist societies. They're Marxist socialist societies. Like, there are lots of atheist societies like Japan who don't do those things. And the difference there is that you say, here is a society by dictators who do lots of bad things, including banning religion, none of which was based on atheism. Nothing they did was based on atheism. There's no part of like doctrine of atheism that says they must implement the new kinds of crop growing strategy that Stalin tried that killed millions of people. None of that is supported by atheism. Marxism, not supported by atheism. Socialism, not supported by atheism. The genocide's not supported by atheism. Atheism doesn't support any of this. So crazy quack religious people have this mistaken belief that these were based on atheism. Atheism has no principles. You can't base anything on atheism. It literally makes no sense. What we can say is that the difference here is that here is a society run by dictators who are trying to force people to be a certain way. Doesn't matter if it's atheist or theist, it's irrelevant. All dictatorship is bad. And here are the societies today that are mostly atheists. None of them are doing that. They are simply choosing by virtue of themselves to become atheists, majority atheist countries. That's the difference that matters. The people in countries where people choose to become atheists are the best in the world at everything. And
except for replacing themselves biologically.
I don't know why that matters. That just literally doesn't matter. It's just like, it's not a criteria.
That doesn't matter. It matters. Because if you can't prolong your society,
that literally doesn't matter. That's a stupid argument. A successful society could be
we
a
had a
single
really
guy.
Great society
stop
that completely
talking.
Died
stop
out.
Talking.
It was great.
All right.
So only a dumbass thinks that forcing a society to reproduce is a requirement to make it a good society. Allowing a society to die could be a perfectly reasonable thing for a society to do. You live a happy life, you end your life, it's over. And everybody in the society does
again,
the society
insults
ends.
Aren't arguments.
You're an idiot. So now I'll explain why you're an idiot. if a society has a bunch of people who live fully happy lives and then choose to die and not have kids, that society was an amazing society. Does it need to continue? No. Does its continuance make it better or worse? No. The ability to continue a society does not add to the quality of the society. You can prolong societies that are god-awful for very long periods of time. You live in Russia. You should know that. The idea that there's a criterion that requires you to progress the society for longer is just irrelevant. It's just irrelevant to quality of life or happiness or the betterment of the society. It's just a stupid thing religious nut jobs say because they want to force women to have more children against their consent.
That is absolutely just again an insult without foundation. If you have a car and a car is a good car, it's one of the main things that makes it good is it, you know, can last 1,000,000 miles as opposed to 100,000 miles. Society can project itself into the future biologically is a fundamental prerequisite to saying that it's a good society. So if you can't extend all of the other virtues that a society may have, are fundamentally dependent on its ability to project itself into the future. Just like if you have a washing machine, a good washing machine does 5,000 cycles, a bad washing machine does a lot less. Same thing here with societies. And you leave it up to the people in who are watching this to say, oh yeah, you can have a great society if everyone suicides.
only an idiot thinks that because they have no
everyone in the society who thinks that not projecting
are you done now
because it's a good idea.
You're wasting my time. So only idiots think the longevity
and only,
of society
only ch- only
stop talking,
childless
stop talking, stop talking.
People who
stop talking.
Spend most
stop
of talking. A chance to respond. I'll
stop
give
talking.
You a chance so, to respond justice.
Only idiots think the longevity of a society is what makes a society good. What makes a society good is the quality of life of the people in the society. You can maximize their quality of life, and if they don't want to live anymore and they've exhausted their life and choosing to end it, that's perfectly fine. Forcing them to live for longer or forcing a continuation of society for longer does not make it better at all. It has zero qualities of making it better at all. This is a religious nut job ideology that's, again, which wants to force people to have babies. That's the consequence of this belief system. We know it. If you want a criterion to be the continuance of a society, force people to have babies, rape, murder, that'll force it to last longer. Does that make it better? No. Societies can end after any duration, and if the quality of the lives of the people in those societies was amazing, then that was a good society. Forcing it to last longer is just irrelevant. It's not like a car. Human lives, human well-being is not like a car. It's not determined based off of the amount of years you live. Can people want more? Yes, that's great. Does it matter to the quality of life of a person that they live 1 billion years? No, people can be happy with shorter lives, and that's perfectly fine. It's up to the individual. Quality of life is what determines whether or not a society is good, not longevity, and only a dumbass thinks otherwise.
All right. I will leave it up again to the people who are watching this debate to say, to think that, you know, if you think that you can live a great, wonderful, filled life and just, you know, randomly choose to die at 40 and that society that promotes that is a good society, I think that's completely, absolutely absurd. The other thing that's absurd is that T-Jump keeps pushing this idea of forcing people to live longer. I'm not saying about forcing people to live longer or forcing people to have babies. It's a question of your framework, your worldview, your ideology. Does it predispose you to extend the society or not? It's not about force. It's not about coercion. It's about what happens in a society that has a proper worldview basis for actually extending itself into the future.
All right. Any response there, T-Jump, or do you want to carry on?
If you value the longevity of a society, and there's a society of people who don't want to produce a birth rate higher than that to refill the population, if you start to force them, rape them to make more kids, that will prolong the society. So the implication of his argument, even though he doesn't realize it because he hasn't thought very much about this field of economics and societal impact, is forcing people by raping them to have more kids to increase the longevity of a society is a good thing. That's a necessary consequence of his argument.
No one is saying that the biological mandate is the only thing by which we measure a society's success rate. That wasn't the argument. Of course, it's literally not the argument. You would say that if I would say that, you know, raping is good. If that's absolutely insane. Of course, no one's saying that.
That's a literal logical necessity of your argument. So your argument is
absolutely
a society
absolutely
that progresses
not.
For longer
absolutely
is better.
Absolutely not.
Okay, so let's just explain how he does
that. To be considered successful, a society has to produce itself into the future. Just like a species, to be considered successful, has to move forward into the future. It doesn't mean that any method of moving forward into the future is justified or is ethical or is equatable to success. But it does need to produce itself into the future to be successful.
That's literally stupid. So if a society of people raping does produce that feature, then it's a higher level of being a successful society than one that has lower birth rates. That's the consequence of your argument. So a society with rape, better than one with low birth rates. That's the necessary
absolutely
consequence
not.
Of what you're saying.
Absolutely not. Because
So a society... It does not need to be able to reproduce to be a good society.
A society must extend itself from the future to be considered a society in the future. It does not mean that a society that exclusively uses rape as a method of extension is a good society. Genghis Khan biologically was successful because, 30% of people in East Asia or Central Asia at the moment can trace their, you know, DNA back to him. It doesn't mean that was right or that was good. Biologically, he was more successful. Is biological success the only thing that we measure when we're measuring the success of a society? Of course not. But it is a prerequisite.
No, it's not. It's literally irrelevant. So there could have been like a perfect society that only lasted 100 years where everybody was happy and they didn't reproduce. That society was objectively better than every other one, like Genghis Khan, even though his lasted longer. It's just a dumb argument because you haven't thought very much about socioeconomic policy.
And insults aren't arguments.
I explained why you were wrong and then added an insult. That's how insults work. So I hear you're wrong, therefore you're a dumbass. The dumbass part isn't the argument, it's the conclusion.
All right. We have more questions coming in, and if you have a question in the live stream, I see that we have still quite an active audience watching our live right now. Hit that like button, and you know, definitely once the debate wraps up, share this out in those spaces you like to have these discussions and let them know that they're happening here. But yeah, in the meantime, we're going to keep rolling through our super chats. We're getting near the end. If you guys keep pouring them in, we'll keep the conversation rolling. We got probably, about another 30 minutes before we would like to wrap up. But if we wrap up a little sooner, that's okay. So it's all dependent on the super chats here. So let's carry on. Hackling the headlines. Where are the medical documents? Can we see them?
Yeah, I mean, I could probably find those and get this to you. I don't make a collection of those things, but I know the people. So, I mean, that is definitely, you know, they got their test results, they went home. I don't have them like in a file, but it could be gotten to.
All right. We'll carry on from there.
Step one in peer review, make all those documents public, put it in the paper. It'd be a pretty good, important step.
Any thoughts over there, Justice, or?
Yeah, I mean, in retrospect, that you're right. I mean, that would probably be a really good idea to have those collected. I just never thought of it. But yeah.
All right. Let's carry on. Joshua Woodwin says, smug atheists need to debate more. Andrew Wilson's. Everyone, if Andrew was rude, then hold your idols to the same standards. No, Andrew was not an Orthodox Christian, meek, mild, and gentle. So any thoughts about We'd hosted Andrew over DebateCon, so they're saying smug atheists need to debate more people like Andrew Wilson. If Andrew was rude, then hold your idols to the same standards. So I think they're saying that people on both sides should do their best to not be rude.
I don't think that's what they're saying. I think what they're saying is if someone criticizes a particular ideology for being rude, they should also criticize their ideology for being rude. I'm okay with rudeness. I think rudeness is great.
I'm hyper polite. I'm Canadian.
Yeah, I think that Andrew made a pretty good, some pretty good points against Matt. I think he did it in a very unchristian way.
Well, let's let's try not to talk about other debaters. I mean, I know the question was directly about.
It was about that. I'm only answering.
What was the topic,
Mister?
Basically,
T-Jump answered, and so I was answering.
Yeah, that's okay. So yeah, we'll try to carry on from there. But
what was the topic on that one?
The topic of that question.
The topic on that one was the debate was, is secular humanism good for society?
Yeah, the actual question. Yeah, sorry, the actual debate. Yeah, sorry, I was there for that. I'm still in recovery mode or something, I guess. From I'm kidding, everyone. All right, so Trevor Say says, defending that scientists agree on a point that hasn't been proven, physical precipitance to the universe, is appealing to authority. Bless you.
What was the question again?
JW says, defending that scientists agree on a point that hasn't been proven is appealing to authority.
No, it's not. So, a couple things there. One, appeals to authority are only fallacious if they're not real authority. Stanford Encyclopedia Philosophy on Fallacies, number 9. Secondly, it has appeals to authority have nothing to do with whether or not something's been proven. That's literally irrelevant in every way. Secondly, or thirdly, quantum fields, which have been confirmed through the Casimir effect, are proven. We have proven them. We know they exist. That's why the consensus is space-time is emergent. So all of that question is just a basic, I don't know anything about physics. Tell me you don't know anything about physics without telling me you don't know anything about physics.
The only thing I would say is that grudgingly, I'd have to agree with T-Jump on this one. The appeal to the appeal to authority fallacy is often misused. It's actually not the appeal to authority fallacy. Sometimes it's the appeal to authority fallacy.
All right. Well, let's see here. Trevor C says, sorry, we just read that one, actually. We'll carry on. Thank you so much for that, Trevor. Issa Kabir, thanks for hanging out in the live chat there, Issa. And like I said in the live chat, it was a pleasure meeting you in Texas, and hopefully you join us for a little discussion after this. I'd like to hang out with you some more. Issa asks, please share more about demons at both. Thank you. So he's just looking for more. He feels like maybe there was something we didn't get to unpack. You know what, Issa? What I can do for you is maybe, since that's a pretty loose question, I can go into my ChatGPT list that I pulled up earlier. That's right, I use ChatGPT. And I'll see if I can find something here. Let's see. How might advancements in science and technology influence our understanding of the supernatural, including the existence of demons? Let's roll that one.
We could discover it. That'd be great.
So, again, that would presuppose the physical nature of demons, that they could be discovered as opposed to only phenomenologically observed.
That's the same thing.
I think the questioner is asking for ghost stories or demon stories, which, you know, I'm happy to provide maybe at the in the after show.
All right. Let's carry on there. Let's see if we can get some more that are a little bit more specific there. Issa, sorry about that. We didn't get too much out of that. But yeah, maybe we'll get to talk a little bit more of it later. Joshua Woodwin, lunatic and quack are synonyms. Also, those prestigious colleges are all garbage today thanks to your worldview. As Medicine America is bad, so is everything atheism touches.
That guy sounds like a dumbass, because, like, we've made tons and tons of scientific progress and discoveries. Like, saying that these institutions are garbage just means he's got his head up his ass. And atheism is, of the countries that are atheists, are the best countries in the world at everything. America is, like, 30th in the country at everything, other than guns and war. And so, yeah, he's just a dumbass. Yeah.
I will just ask that not to come directly at the super chatters there, and just try to to understand it. But yeah, just because we do appreciate our super chatters there, and
TJ makes it a habit to
he's going to have to send in more super chats now to defend yourself there, Joshua. Sorry, but
TJ makes it his personal habit to text and insult. Both the debaters and the viewers.
All right.
So that's
people in general. I'm happy to insult people in general.
Alex comes in with his next one here. Says, "Can faith heal an amputee?"
Can, yes. Does not that I'm aware of. Can, yes.
All right. Any thoughts over there, T-Jump? We just move on.
It's like asking, can a rock heal an amputee? I've never seen it happen, but there's no logical contradiction in it.
All right, let's carry on. Ted O'Neill, thank you. This will be our final super chat unless we have any more pop in, but we've gone for a pretty decent amount of time. So, if nobody else has any other questions, we'll end off here. Ted O'Neill asks, have larger families not had a greater success rate? Is the atheistic worldly view affecting the success of having siblings and childbirth in society?
So again, this is a dumbass religious argument that only dumbasses make. Whether or not you have siblings, whether or not you have more kids, isn't a measure of quality of life. Literally not. You could have no kids and have an amazing life. You have one kid, have an amazing life. Whether or not the society makes enough kids to reproduce the society is a dumbass Republican talking point that is just literally irrelevant to whether a society is good or whether people's lives are good. You just don't need it. It's just an arbitrary statistic based on pragmatism, because Republicans and religious people are obsessed with making women have children, even if they don't want them.
Alrighty. Any thoughts there, Justus? Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Go into the into the literature and see that the people who are from moderately large families, so from 4 to 6 children, usually have the most predictable good outcomes for life, both psychologically and economically. So there is literature on that. It's not just a dumbass talking point. Like,
no, it's false. Jump likes to, likes quality of life is single kids. Single kids have the best.
Likes to say, but so I'd encourage everyone to go look it up themselves. Again, biologically putting yourself into the future is a prerequisite for the species, a prerequisite for any decent society. It's not the only thing. You could have a horrible society that does survive in the future. But if you want to have a successful society, it does have to push itself into the future in some way. So that's the definition of a successful society, as one of the definitions, one of the fundamental definitions.
All right. So
I just found it. Research consistently finds that only children tend to perform better academically and emotionally than multiple siblings. Evolution theory can help explain the only child's education advantage, and more time with the parents, more time to develop with friends, more money can go to their education and hobbies. So yeah, single children do better, have better quality of lives than large.
I'd encourage the people who are watching this debate to look into it yourselves. Don't take T-Jump's word for it. True. He likes to insult and read things from Google.
So we do have one more super chat. Before you do your closing there and your wrap-up, sounds like you're trying to do a wrap-up there, Justus. I will give you both 1 minute to close, and I'm sorry, Andre, I missed that very first super chat from you. Thank you so much for that first super chat, and I'm sorry that you sent in a second one to clarify, but I did get you, brother. I'm so sorry. So Andre P. asks, T-Jump, what about historic militant atheists?
There aren't any, I think. I don't really know of any. There's historic militant communists. Maybe Dawkins is a militant atheist trying to promote atheism. Like, there isn't really a militant atheist other than like the Four Horsemen. Hitchens, Harris, Dawkins, Dennett. Like, I guess they're historic militant atheists, but nobody else really is. All of the talking points that dumb religious people bring up, like Hitler, Stalin, Mao, Pol Pot, none of them are militant atheists. They were militant politicians and political ideologies that they were promoting. They had nothing to do with atheism, literally irrelevant. They just wanted people to obey their political systems. And so they wanted to take away opposing ideologies, which included religion, like what Justice was saying about Putin taking away Jehovah's Witnesses because they didn't agree with his political system. It's literally the same thing as what Hitler, Mao, and Pol Pot did. Literally the same thing. It has nothing to do with promoting atheism. It's getting rid of dissidents.
Yeah. I think that the observing or the interested observer will take into consideration Lenin, a well-known figure in the 20th century, who wrote 20-some volumes of work, and consistently goes back to atheism as a fundamental for replacing the Christian ideologies of the nations that he was inflicting communism on with an ideology that was consistent with atheism. And so it's definitely not just, oh, you know, it was communist, it was an atheist. Atheism is the vacuum into which communism, Marxism, fascism, whatever ism else that you have, is then poured. So yes, is it directly atheism? No, but it's the prerequisite.
That's literally the stupidest argument ever. If you have an empty pot, you can pour anything into it, like Christianity or Judaism or Islam. Empty pots are literally empty. So claiming that, oh, well, they poured in a different thing I didn't like instead of the garbage I do like is just hypocritical.
All right, let's move into, and I'm going to pass it back over to you, T-Jump, 1 minute on the clock to give your closing statement.
Okay, I'm done. Good. Next.
Thank you, T-Jump. 1 minute on the clock. There, Justice, closing statement.
So as I said in the beginning, I want to do this debate to give a reference point for people who might be suffering from demonic oppression or different demonic influences. I'd like you to consider the fact that there is a historical argument which I gave. There is quite a bit of evidence from modern exorcists who have been helping people, and I have my own anecdotal evidence which I provided or was able to reference to. If you are dealing with feelings of depression, anxiety, or other more serious influences that cannot be explained, that you might think have to do with the demonic, I would really, really, really encourage everyone to get psychological help, to get help from a medical institution. But if they persist, know that you may have be dealing with something greater, something more powerful than what the medicine or what the institution of modern medicine can explain, and you may need help. So seek help. Christ can help you. Christ gives freedom from the demonic. And so be free. Know the truth and be free.
Demons right. of the Gaps argument. Love it.
With that, we will close out our debate for tonight. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in for our debate. I see lots of you hanging out in the live chat here. Make sure you hit the like button if you enjoyed our discussion tonight. Or if you didn't enjoy it, hit the like button anyway. What the hell? It's not going to hurt you. What we'll do is we'll close out from here. A big round of virtual applause. Both of our guests are linked in the description. So if you like what you're hearing from either of them, definitely check out the links in the description. We are going to be doing an after show over at Matters Now, so you can come check that out. In the meantime, enjoy these nice little guitar licks from yours truly. Cheers, everybody.
YouTube.com/TJump. Like, comment, subscribe, because give me money.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.